Blog Talk Radio.
Anxiety sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettle, sweat drips my face. Hands take, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I just brace and I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the brakes ain't hurting me. Gain on, a bomb, my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong. Be patient, meet them head to head. I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stopping, have a promise to prove I'm a fighter. It's not an option to lose.
Everyone, hey, how's it going? We're having technical difficulties today. I couldn't get the switchboard to come up. Well, I'm hoping all of you had a great weekend. I know I did. And we have Mountain Man in the co-host seat. Hey, Mountain Man, how's it going? And Kimberly, welcome to the chat room. Nice to see you. Welcome, everybody, to Motivational Monday. The message for today I'm bringing to you is about the fact that we need to start thinking about where we're going, what we're doing, and why are we going there. That's the cool thing to think about. I know last week we talked about the fact that a lot of us always look at Mondays as, oh man, I can't believe it's Monday. I can't believe I have to go to work. Yuck, gross. I'm trying to impress upon you guys, we need to change our attitude around. We need to realize that Mondays should be an opportunity to get pumped up and realize that there's a lot of things that we can actually accomplish in life. And this Monday, I decided to declare my independence. Some of you that aren't familiar with it, I actually am part of a blended family, and we raised a combination of 9 kids and 2 nephews over a long period of time. And our youngest is now 17, and he's independent, and he's out on his own. Not really. He's actually a junior in high school, but he thinks he's out on his own. And for the most part, all our other children are basically living on their own. We have a couple that come home for the summer because they're in college. But other than that, they're very independent. So I decided that I wanted the whole world to know that it was my turn now. I'm going to go out and conquer the world and climb the summit and just have a good time doing it. And I want them to understand the fact that it's my turn now. And that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's not that I'm cutting them out of my life. It's just that they have to understand that as a parent, we sometimes put our life on hold for a very long time. We put all our dreams and our hopes on hold because we want to provide a great way of life for our kids. And when they're grown, it's parents' time. And there's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to stay home and bake cookies for the grandchildren if you don't want to. If that's what brings you joy, absolutely do it. But if you want to jump out of a plane, or you just want to explore the mountains, or you just want to go for a walk, or you want to take a new hobby, then that's what you need to do. Don't be afraid to venture out to new worlds and new horizons, and don't feel guilty. It's okay. If your child has something planned and you can't be there because you had already planned something, it's part of being a grown-up. That happens. It doesn't mean you don't love them. It doesn't mean they don't love you. It just means that you guys are all conquering new worlds together and separately at the same time. So it's all right to do that, and there's no reason to feel guilty. So Motivational Monday, think about what would make you happy. What do you want to explore? I don't care how silly you think it seems. If you are 50 years old and decide you want to learn martial arts, if you're 80 and want to run your first road race, not a problem. You can do it. It's all a matter about having the guts to go out there and do it and not be afraid of what other people think. Because the reality is, we don't care what other people think. Because other people are sweet and kind, but sometimes their kindness kind of stifles us a little bit because they just want to protect us and they don't want to get hurt. So don't be afraid to go out there and conquer your world and have a great time doing it. Our guest today is David Paulson. He is an amazing person, and I believe I have him on the line here. So if you will hold on a minute, we will check on him. David.
Yes.
Are you there? Hi, how are you?
Charlie, how's it going?
Very good. Thank you for coming on our show.
This is great. Not a problem.
I was very excited about the fact that you agreed to be on here with us because you have an amazing journey that you've taken in the last few years, don't you?
Yeah, I guess.
You're so humble, David. I was like, well, yeah, not really. Hold on a second. I have my co-host here. Let's see if he's on. Mountain Man is my co-host for this week, and he's trying out to see if actually he can get the call in through his computer, so it's like a great adventure in technology here. Mountain Man, are you there?
Yes.
Did it work?
Hello?
Is it working for you?
I don't know. Can you hear me?
I can hear him.
I can hear you.
One, two,
can
three.
You hear me? Can you hear
yes,
me?
Yes, you can hear me.
I can hear you.
Can hear me.
Welcome, Mountain Man. It's going to be
welcome.
An interesting episode. So, David, real quick, we'll get right into it. So, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background. How did you get started? Now, I understand you mentioned before that you originally started with the post office.
Actually, I'm still with the post office.
That's right.
I've got 21 years in.
Oh, excellent. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. Thank you.
how did you get started in the post office? Is it something you always wanted to do? Is it one of those things that just came along?
It was one of those things where, it was 20 years ago. It was a great, great job with benefits, and I had a young family, and it was the thing to do. And, once you're in there, you're in there for quite a while. So what I wound up doing with what you were saying earlier, I wound up, when I was young, I was making little films, independent little things. I was doing a little bit of acting, not a lot, but then I went to work and I put everything aside for those 20 years, maybe 15 years, about 5 or 6 years ago, I got involved with a group of NYU students who were doing a thesis film up in Melrose, and they needed somebody to be a script supervisor, so I jumped on with them, and it just woke something in me, and I just kept on going from that point on.
Now, let me ask you a question, David. Were you involved in film or acting when you were younger, as a teenager? Is that something that you had done before, or is it something that you came to all new as an adult?
Yeah, since I was a kid, I was actually making little 8mm films. You know, there was no digital or anything back then. It was all little Brownie Super 8. You'd edit things by hand with Scotch tape and everything else. So I was making a bunch of those, and at one point I was doing some theater after high school, and I tried out for the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, and I got accepted. But at the time, it was either tuition or something was going on, and I didn't do it. I didn't go out to New York, and went straight to work, and then you know, and then you get married and you have kids. I had three sons.
So you actually did get accepted to the Academy, and of
yes,
course, sometimes that
yeah.
happens when you weren't able to go. So that has to be a little bit of a testament to your ability and your talent. I mean, not just everybody gets accepted to this.
It was, it was kind of, you know, you sit in this big room with three people sitting at a wooden table, and you're pretty much like the, you know, the tip of the show Fame, you know, and you
yep.
do a couple of monologues, and then you wait and see what they say, and
mm-hmm.
then you don't find out right then, you get the letter later on, but.
Right.
But yeah, it was something that probably was in me, you know.
Right.
But you know, things happen. You have to do what you have to do.
No, that's very true, because I can relate to it, because I know for me and my whole life when I was little, I loved being in dramatic art and all that stuff, and my parents are like, "You need to get a real job." I'm like, "Oh, great," you know. So it wasn't something that was encouraged. And it's kind of like similar. It wasn't until I became much older where, like you said, something got awoken again. So you basically, you went to work, and then, like you said, 5 or 6 years ago, you kind of woke up again. And what did you see yourself doing at that time? Or how did you feel when that reemerged in you? And what did you see yourself doing with it?
During that whole time when I wasn't active in the thing, I was writing all the time, you
mm-hmm.
know, and, you know, short stories and stuff like that, and scripts and everything. But I found that I was more visual as a writer, so
right.
screenplay stuff came more naturally.
Right.
I tend to get bored by, you know, writing long descriptions of stuff, you know.
funny.
You know, I did some great, you know, I did some short stories, and people seemed to really like them and stuff and everything, and it was like, you know, yeah, but, you know, it was really a hassle trying to write it down and everything else. So when this I think it was NewEnglandFilm.com posted
mm-hmm.
this call for this thesis film, and it was script supervisor, and at the time, I didn't really know what was involved in that. It's a really demanding job, you know. But I signed on as script supervisor, and here I am, you know, measuring the ashes on the cigarettes after each take and make sure everything.
See, people
cool.
don't realize what it involves. Real quick, David, not to interrupt you. I want to welcome guest 313 at 322, guest 3065. Welcome so much. And Lisa, thank you so much for your kind words. She says her and her hubby enjoyed listening to the show, and I'm so grateful for that. Also, what I'd like to do, if you have any questions for David as we move into the show, the number is 347-989-1473. Again, the number is 347-989-1473. Or you can log on to the website, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman, and woman is WMN. And you can log on there. You can ask questions on the chat room, or you can actually call right in directly if you have the headsets and the microphone. So, yeah, David, as you were saying, being a script supervisor, there's a lot of attention to detail that gets involved in this. It's kind of like the continuation coordinator that you see sometimes. So once you started doing that, did you ever foresee yourself being in front of the camera?
Well, there was always that little bit there. Like, most of the acting I did had been theater, so it was, you know, it was... I was in Inherit the Wind. I was in a few other things. But in theater,
mm-hmm.
theater is a little different because you really have to project. And I really had always wanted writing and directing and stuff like that, and just pulling things together.
Mm-hmm.
And the script supervisor job, actually, where it was an independent type thing, we had like 2 weeks with a small budget in the middle of a blizzard. And, you know, it was an incredible experience.
Oh,
wow.
Oh my goodness.
But you wound up doing almost everything on the set, you know. And
right,
loved that part of it. I loved the part of just being able to, you know, just figure things out and solve problems and get things done and you know, bring a film in under budget and on time and everything else and stuff.
And that's a big deal, because especially here in the New England area, you wind up having to realize that you deal with the elements and you have to deal with, you know, everything. Like, you and I actually wind up meeting when we were working on the set of Grown Ups.
Right.
And that actually wound up being something that I guess originally was only supposed to be a couple of weeks that we were supposed to be there, and that kind of got extended to a lot of days over 5 weeks because of the weather. And, I mean, I swear the people from this production think that we live in monsoon weather because it just poured.
I know, I know. It was, yeah, as a matter of fact, it was funny. It would, the only time we weren't working was when the sun came out, so, you know.
It was. It was ridiculous. And I remember one time we were actually in the tent where the wind was blowing and everything,
yeah.
And it was kind of funny because one of my sons was there, and he's like, "Mom, I'm having flashbacks to basic boot camp because in this tent." He's like, "I think I'm getting ready to go up for, like, a survival drill."
It was
a lot of fun. So now, David, you talked about directing and screenwriting. So what are some of the things that you've been doing lately? I know I mentioned you were on Grown Ups. What other stuff have you been doing?
I did The Fighter, and I did Zookeeper. And part of the reason I like doing that, some of the SAG actors had talked me into that. I was working with them on various little projects. You know, we were just planning stuff and everything, and they said, "Well, you know, you really ought to try background work." And I said, "Okay, let me give it a shot." And what I like about it is that when I'm on there, I'm not necessarily there. You know, I'm there doing the job that I'm supposed to do for the acting and stuff, but
right.
I'm watching the crew, I'm watching the director, I'm getting all the stuff. It's like film school, you know, I'm making the connections, and I run the Boston Scriptwriters Group. And being on the set has been really instrumental in getting some guest speakers for our group because I'll explain a little bit.
Now, that's very true. Now, one of the things that I suggest, and somebody suggested it for my son. I have another son he's actually in school right now for screenwriting and cinematography.
Right.
And they said the exact same sentiments that you just did, that working as a background really gives you an education into what goes into the film industry as far as the process of making a movie and stuff. And you're right, it's kind of like in-your-face 101 filmmaking, because you can talk about it in a classroom, you can, you know, kind of visualize it, but not once you're there where you see the production assistants running around and the lighting guys and dealing with the weather and the changes in schedule, or what if one of your extras moves and they're not where they're supposed to be. For continuation,
right,
and stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a lot of work. So what are some of the things that you suggest for people that are interested in screenwriting and that kind of thing? And I want to cover a little bit later in the show about your scriptwriters group in
sure.
more detail, but what are some of the suggestions that you make for people that are in your situation that they want to do directing and they want to do screenwriting, and what are some of the things that they can do to further their knowledge and their understanding of how the film industry works?
The first thing and the best thing I think to do would be to get on a set somewhere, whether it's an independent film or, you know, join one of the casting companies. There are great casting companies around here. Get on a set, even as an extra type of thing. I mean, it's a very important part in the film. And observe while you're there. I mean, there's some downtime while they're waiting to set stuff up. Just watch what goes on. And especially if you're a writer, it is great to see what goes into a film, because it helps your writing. Because if you can write with an eye to budget or an eye to what, you know, say this shot, I mean, it would be wonderful to have a monsoon come through in your independent film. But then you see what it takes to make one, and you look at how much money you've got, and you go, maybe I should write this a little a little leaner, you know. And it challenges you as a writer, but it also will probably improve your script sale, too.
It really does. The other thing, too, that by working as an extra, you get, well, it's cool when you do the whole spectrum, because I've been blessed in the last year where I actually had the opportunity to pursue the acting and the writing full time, that you see the spectrum from the really low, low, low independent budget to the no budget, you know, film student kind of project to the big budget where money is no object. And it really gives you an inkling of how the process works into the way that it makes you think about the fact that, okay, I want a helicopter to blow up in my scene, and obviously I can't afford to buy a helicopter. And you get really creative with how to bring this to the screen in the cheapest way possible and still try to make it look realistic.
Exactly.
And that's one of the things that I've realized. Now, you were talking about your scriptwriters group. What exactly is that, and how did that get started?
Boston Scriptwriters is the New England chapter of the Scriptwriters Network out in Los Angeles, and they are a nonprofit organization on the back lot of Universal Studios, and they've been in business for about 20 years, And what they do is they have a number of screenwriters groups all about California, you know, all around California. And they work with their writers, and they do things like they provide coverage and on your scripts and everything else. But the main purpose is to get writers' scripts ready for submission. And they have a group called the Friends of the Network, and it's all Hollywood, huge, very impressive list of production studios that have agreed to read the scripts of these writers that belong to the network.
That's amazing to hear that, because I know personally, because I'm involved in the process, I see how much Hollywood is coming east to our area to produce films. And a lot of times we just assume that the script and everything has already been done in L.A. or New York, and it's just, you know, we just get, quote-unquote, the smaller roles and that kind of thing. But now you're explaining to our listeners that it's actually, we're getting more than what we think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and the thing is, it's really, I mean, you can write a script and you can send it out to every production company. You can buy a book called The Hollywood Creative Directory, and it has a list of all the companies in there and their addresses and contacts and everything else. And you can send your script out to everybody in that book, but more often than not, your script will probably stop at the front desk unless, you know, unless it's agented or unless somebody recommends it. Now, the Hollywood this Scriptwriters Network, and now Boston Scriptwriters, give you the opportunity that, you know, we have these people who say, yes, well, you know, you send this thing. What we have is we have two sessions. So when you send your script in, it's read by two readers, and if both readers recommend or consider it, they write notes up on it. If they recommend or consider it, then it goes on to two more readers. If you get a combination of three recommends or considers, then you're declared a winner, and you are marketed to all these production companies, and they will read your script, and you won't have to worry about, you know, getting these rejection letters and everything else. They will read your script.
So that's an amazing opportunity for people in the New England area to be able to get their foot in the door, as far as at least having someone read their product. I mean, it's not a guarantee that it's going to get produced, but at least you know that it's not sitting there collecting dust on some receptionist's desk.
Well,
At least someone's actually reading it.
The great thing about it is that just yesterday at our meeting, we announced that one of our New England writers, Jean Doucette, who went through the process, was declared the winner in the August round of things. So his script is now going to be marketed to these companies and will most likely get sold.
That's awesome.
And
that
that's
is really
first,
awesome.
That's the first writer from our group, you know, and still fairly a fairly new group. But he sent it out the first time. They gave him back notes, and I mean, they're very, very brutal notes. And he said, you know, they were absolutely right, and he rewrote everything from scratch using the notes they gave him. And he submitted it the second time, and boom, got in. And
now, see, that's something that's important, and I know that for me, I've had to do the brutal part because I'm not, obviously, not a professional like that, but I've had to do a lot of editing because my son uses me as his little editor. And you have to be brutal where you have to say, this character is a dead end. You bring him to here and now what? Or this character, I'm supposed to care that he's dead, but I really don't. As a matter of fact, I forgot he was even in the script because you didn't make him that interesting. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, that kind of stuff.
It doesn't do a writer any good to, you know, to sugarcoat anything and say, oh, you know, I kind of let, you know, you have to really, really, really be tough. And that's what, you know, because then they do the work and then it gets it right. So I mean, it's not a popular job, but you know, it's
not that you're doing them a favor, because I would rather have, you know, people of my peers correcting me and guiding me and helping me to make a script that is going to be a great finished product than to actually get it in the door where they're going, oh, this is horrendous, and then every time they see my name, it's just going to get thrown to the side, because it's kind of like that one-shot deal sometimes where if it's not a finished product that has the quality that people are looking for, it's basically the kiss of death when it comes to trying to sell your script.
Yeah, exactly. The last thing you want is a reputation for being, like, mediocre. So when you send your thing in, it has to be your best effort.
Right. Especially if it's, like you said, your very first time in.
Right.
So how did the group got started here? How long have you guys been meeting in this area?
Well, we started. What happened was I went out to Los Angeles to the Screenwriters Expo, and I was on staff there. And I met the president out there, and he said, you know, we have a thing called the Hollywood Outreach Program, and we believe there are other screenwriters outside of Los Angeles that have talent.
Really? I never would have thought of that.
It took him a long time to realize that,
that's funny.
He said, would you be interested in heading up the, you know, something in the Northeast? And that was about 2 years ago. And it took 2 years of a lot of false starts, not really false starts, but just trying to get, you know, we had a few problems. We were meeting at, like, restaurants and then rehearsal spaces and it was awfully hard. And it's difficult on people, too, because out in Los Angeles, everybody is geared toward movies. You know, that's the big industry out there.
Exactly.
On the East Coast, we all have full-time jobs, and a lot of us are balancing the stardom, the Hollywood thing.
Yes.
You know, you have to work both. You have to make a living, and
you really follow
your dream. And and so, you know, when you schedule a meeting and stuff, a lot of people can't make it because they're doing the other thing, you know, they're working on a film, or they're doing something, you know. So it was really difficult at first to try to find a happy medium where people could meet and try to keep this going. So I'm happy to say with yesterday's meeting, we had a really good turnout. We had Richie Minervini as a special guest, and he was our very first guest speaker.
So, David, real quick, for our listeners, can you explain a little bit about who Richie is and how you wind up being able to have him as a guest at the meeting?
Oh, sure. Richie is he is the founder of the East Side Comedy Club out in Long Island, and he launched, his club launched the careers of Ray Romano and Eddie Murphy and Rosie O'Donnell and a great number of comedians came out of that club. And Richie's a stand-up comedian. He's also in Grown Ups, Paul Blart Mall Cop, and Zookeeper. So he's just taken the jump into acting. And I met him on Grown Ups and had asked his manager, Doug Murphy, was also an extra with us. And just asked, I said, you know, hey, do you think Richie would come talk to our screenwriters and everything? And he was very, very accommodating. And so we put together this event. It was, it was going to be just a event-only type thing, but then with the schedules, the way they were and everything, Richie wound up coming to the meeting.
Right.
And it was a smash hit. It was really, really a great, great time. And he was incredible, you know.
One of the things for our listeners to understand, and for people that, because I get asked that question a lot, how do we get started, that kind of thing, and people don't understand that now at this point in time, here in the Massachusetts area, New England area, we're really at a golden opportunity to be able to get basically from the ground up, because we have the opportunity for people like yourself to network on set with certain people and have them come to our meetings. And sometimes that's something that in Hollywood or New York, because it's so big already, it doesn't get to happen as much.
Right.
And this is a great opportunity for people that are thinking of getting into the industry or have wanted to get in the industry to not hesitate any longer and to realize that this is definitely the time to do it. Now, can you also explain a little bit about Plymouth Rock and what is it and what's coming down the road with that?
Plymouth Rock Studios is the first Hollywood studio to be out on the East Coast here. I don't know how long it's been going on, but it seems like every 10 years, everybody talks about, you know, hey, Hollywood should be on the East Coast too. From a logistical standpoint, just from money alone and everything, it would make perfect sense to have to send your equipment and everything only halfway across the country rather than all the way across the country. And, and we have stuff like Boston Camera and everything else here. We have resources here. So, thank God, the tax incentive thing went through a couple of years ago, and we've been steadily seeing more films being made in Massachusetts. And now the studios will be going in, I believe, 2010 sometime. They just got the construction loan approved, so now we can break ground on it.
Right.
And, you know, we're going to have a full Hollywood studio here with sound stages and I think MIT's doing a story lab and everything else. And
mm-hmm.
It's going to be huge, and more movies are going to be made here. And so people who want to get in the business now, this is the time to really, really get involved. And it was funny because when I was out in Los Angeles in November, we were doing the Screenwriters Expo out there, and there were so many students from Emerson who were out there, and they were like, oh, you know, there's not really a lot of work out here. It was around the time of the writer's strike, too. Not the writer's strike, the SAG. SAG was about to go on strike, and we didn't know what was going to happen, so a lot of productions were put on hold, you know.
Right.
And they were like, oh, you know, we'd love to move back and everything else. And no one seemed to know about the studio project because it hadn't really been announced yet out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now is the time for the East Coast, and if there are people out here who think this is something they want to get into, well, now is the time. And one of the things I want to do with Boston Scriptwriters is I want to build this strong screenwriter base and have us go down into the studio and have a base there, so when these movies come here, they can see, you know, hey, you know, we don't need to just bring everything out here. We have resources out here. We have great writers out here, and you know, I mean, it's just the perfect time to show what we're made of, and you know,
it really is a perfect time now. And the other thing too, David, for our listeners to understand is we're still at a time where the industry is growing, but we're not so big yet.
Right.
That it's impossible for us to get inside doors. For example, like you mentioned, some of the casting companies, like we have, you know, Boston Casting, CP Casting, we have Angela Perry runs Boston Casting, and we have, you know, RPM and Jody Pretty and them. We're still at a point where you can actually get to see them face-to-face. They actually remember you. You can actually network with them. And the reality is we're going to be growing so much that in a couple of years that's not going to happen because
right.
they're just going to be too busy. Not that they think they're better than us, but they're just going to be too busy to be able to do that. Even yourself now, like you mentioned that your group is growing, but the reality is with the momentum that you're building, we're talking about a meeting down the road that could probably have 200, 300, 400 people, maybe even more, and there's no way that you can have that one-on-one contact that you would with a smaller meeting like you can now.
Right, right.
Now, what are some of the things that you would suggest for some listeners that are interested in getting into this besides getting on the set? What are some things that they can do now to ensure that they start creating a path to get them to where Hollywood gets a lot bigger and more productions are coming into the area and they can be part of that?
What you want to do is you want to decide what you want to do in the industry. If you want to write, then there are the Creative Screenwriting Expo out in Los Angeles. There are different competitions. You know, write a script, send it to these competitions and everything, just to
mm-hmm.
start building up some kind of familiarity and also learn the business. Whatever you decide to do, if you're going to do crew work, learn how the crew work. You know how crews work and everything. Learn as much as you can about the business, and whatever you're going to do, even if you're acting, you should learn how the entire business works. And you know, it's great to have an agent, and you know, I highly recommend it anyway. It's your career, and whatever you are doing, you should know how everything works. And if you
now, that's a very good piece of advice, because a lot of times when we're only focusing on the acting aspect of it.
Right.
We think, okay, let me get acting lessons, let me learn methods, let me learn all these things, you know, cold reads, all that stuff.
Right.
A lot of times we don't think about learning the process behind the camera and with the scripts. Now, why do you think it's a good idea to be able to have that knowledge so you're more well-rounded?
Well, for one thing, it's good to protect yourself. You're your commodity, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing is it's your business, basically. Honestly, you should really know, you know, what to watch out for, what to, you know. So when it comes time to negotiating things, you know, you know what you're doing. You won't be taken advantage of. Not that it happens all the time, but
mm-hmm.
it just makes sense. And not only in show business career, but in whatever career you're doing, to learn how everything works. just so you know, and on another standpoint is when you're going for a job or an interview or anything like that, if you can talk the talk and you know what's going on. I found that when I go to when I go out to pitch scripts, what I do is whatever company I'm pitching to, I'll go back and I'll check everything they've done. And I'll, you know, read, you know, how they did that year as far as that type of stuff and everything. And I can go and I can say, hey, you know, this is like, you know, and you'll bring up, a film they did, whether it did well or whether it didn't, you know. But the more you know about the company, the better you look.
Now, and that's very good advice, because if you have a script that you've worked on for a long time and it's a finished product and it's really good, it obviously makes sense that you don't want to have that invested by a company that might not get the best product or might not invest the money or not the marketing. There's
right.
so many areas where a good script can go horribly wrong, and that's absolutely great advice to make sure that you do the research to know that this is a viable company. Now, one of the things, David, that I've noticed is a lot of times you have script writers or even actors that they see this golden opportunity and they're almost afraid to say no because they think, oh, this is the only one I'm going to get, and they want to jump at it without buyer beware kind of thing.
You have to have confidence in yourself, and you have to know. I mean, you know, there are a lot of opportunities, and yes, you can miss an opportunity, you know. But if you do the research, then you usually be okay on that. But know what you're worth, you know. Know what
right.
what your product is worth. Know what you are worth, and don't settle for, you know, the first thing that comes along.
And that's also very good advice for the fact that, you, like I said, you can have a really good script, and unfortunately, if the product doesn't come out the way you envisioned it or the way you wanted it to, that, again, can put a negative impact on your name to try to get a second script sold. They're not going to say, well, it was the company
right.
that did it wrong. It's your script, so it's going to be associated with you not writing a really good product.
Right. Well, I'll tell you just a little brief little story. Is one of the first scripts that we wrote, I wrote with a co-writer out there, out in Los Angeles, and it was called
mm-hmm.
The Crypt Kicker 5, and
mm-hmm.
it's a story about five friends who are estranged. They go into high school, they break up, they go into their different little groups and everything, and then a school shooting brings them back together, and it's more about
mm-hmm.
friendship. Now, the actual
right.
shooting was only 15 minutes in the script. It was a half a page in the script,
right.
but it was critical. It was the turning pin in the whole story, you know. I had pitched it. There was a pretty good sized company that was interested in it. And the problem with that type of story is that around the time, in the news, everywhere you turned on, there was some kind of a shooting going on, you know.
I know.
It was wild. It was insane. But they
mm-hmm.
came to me. The company came to me, and this was a pretty major company too. And they said, you know what? Can you take the shooting out?
Mm-hmm.
Can you just remove it, change it to
mm-hmm.
something else?
Right.
And I thought about it, and I went back, and I said, no, I can't.
Right.
It was intrinsic to the story. It was, you know, even that small little piece, half a page or whatever, was like the whole heart and soul of the script. It was about...
Well, and that's another thing there where you sometimes it's not about the money, and this is something, because I have another son that's in the music industry, and one of the things he said is that as much as he wants to quote-unquote make it and, you know, have the millions of dollars and, you know, be able to buy his mom a house, as he said jokingly, he doesn't want to sell out, and I know that's a very hard thing for some people to understand, and you just worded it perfectly. You have this script, and you have a part of it that's pivotal to the story,
right.
and you could have taken it out, but then the viewers, like I myself, would be sitting there going, okay, I think I'm missing something here, and that's not what you wanted, because that's being associated with your creative process and how you wrote that script.
Exactly. If you're putting all the time in on whether it's a script or a song or whatever, you're putting all that time into it, you know, you do it because you believe in it, and really, you know, there'll be another opportunity. There'll be another company that will do it. Or now, in this wonderful age of filmmaking and everything, you can make it yourself, you know? And that's
it's
what
very
we,
true. It's very true. I know, for example, my son has a script that he wrote. It's a short story, and he's envisioned it one way. And kind of similar to what you were talking with the school shootings, where people could go, oh my goodness, you know, it's violent, it's not, but it's the premise of the story for him was telling it not from the victim's point of view, but from the actual perpetrators. And I know that that's a hot button issue because people think they're sympathizing, but in his point of view,
right.
excuse me, even when I was helping him edit the script, he's like, that's the story I'm going to tell. And he's like, and if it upsets people, then he's like, then I did my job, because we sometimes the story has to be told from a different angle. And yeah, he could have changed it to be able to get the funding or to be able,
right.
but in his mind, like you said, you can't, because this is the story he's telling and he wants to be true to his art form. And sometimes you have to do that.
You have to do that. And I had, a while back I had done a, I had attended a mystery panel, and Ed McBain, of the 87th Precinct series, and Robert Parker were there and everything. And I went up to Ed McBain and I asked him, because he's a brilliant writer. He was a brilliant writer. And I said to him, you know, I've got this story and it's a little bit controversial. And you know, I didn't tell him what it was. And I said, well, how did, you know, what, should I write it or should I not? It was during a very sensitive time in the country and everything. I said, should I write it or should I not? And he said, you know what? He says, you should write it. He said, it's your story. It's what you have to say. It's your voice.
Right.
And don't let anyone silence your voice. And people that don't want to see it will not, you know, see it. But people, but it will mean something to somebody. So he said, just always go and always be true to what you want to say. And
that is very true, because, like, I'll tell you, David, originally when I first read my son's script, to me it just, it blew my mind, first of all, because I, like you said, it was a very controversial subject. I mean, obviously, school shootings, and just the fact that he was covering it from the perpetrator side. And it actually made me think to the point that, granted, there are acts of violence, but there's always a why.
Yes.
And we're always looking for the why after the fact. Well, his story was kind of giving us an idea of what the why was,
right.
and giving us a chance to think about it before it happened for real.
Exactly.
Quote unquote, in the real world. And you're right, it's very important to have the courage to step outside the boundaries and be able to share that story, even at times where people are saying, well, you know, you really don't want to talk about that because it's not a good thing to talk about.
Yeah.
And it actually brings to mind another gentleman that's going to be a guest on my show later in the month, Woody Savoda, who's doing a movie on called Purpose, Power of Purpose, and it's covering suicide and suicide prevention, which is
a very exciting project.
It is an exciting project, and again, it's one of those things that people don't want to talk about because it's taboo, and you have to, as a creative person, have the courage to sometimes bring things out that aren't popular, aren't going to make you feel good, but are going to make you think, and going to make you actually maybe do something about it.
Yeah, and that's
so
our,
David,
that's our mission as artists anyway, is to provoke thought.
Absolutely. Now, David, how did you guys wind up having the scriptwriters group at MIT?
Well, that's kind of a funny story, because we had jumped from space to space to space, and apparently there's a spot at MIT where people have been using the rooms for the labs for I don't know how long. And it's pretty much you go in, you grab something, you get in and you get out, that type of thing. So they're not sponsoring us at all.
Oh, okay.
But it's just a, you know, you find your opportunity and you take.
But it's nice that you actually have a place to meet where it's accessible and it's easy to get into. And, well, obviously if someone says, well, the meeting's at MIT, you have more people willing to go just because, I don't know, maybe like a safety thing that it's not some random address or whatever. There's some, regardless, even if they're not sponsoring you, it gives you a little credibility that you've actually had the ability to meet there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and actually it worked out well. We'll see. You know, what we have to do to secure that. You know, so.
Now, how often do you guys meet?
Well, we meet once a month. And we're looking at the possibility of maybe twice a month. But the once a month thing seems to work. One of the things that we do for the writers is we offer coverage. And coverage, if you're a writer and you've written a script, there are tons of companies out in Los Angeles where you can send your script and pay a couple hundred dollars and have somebody read it. Sometimes it's an industry reader, sometimes it's not, but, you know.
Right.
And they'll give you notes back and everything else. And what we do in our group is somebody will offer up their script for the month, and we'll get writers who are in the group to offer to do coverage, and the coverage is the same format as the Hollywood format.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The one difference I stress on it is that if something doesn't work for you in the script, you have to give an indication of why it doesn't work. A lot of times you don't
mm-hmm.
get that. A lot of times you just say, you know, this doesn't make sense, blah, 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 and they don't give you anything else to work with.
That's an interesting point, because that does happen a lot, not only with scripts, but even with auditions. Well, you go to an audition, you don't get the part, but you're sitting there going, why? And
I don't know.
You have no clue. It's like, how can you fix something that you don't know? So that is a really valuable part for an up-and-coming screenwriter, to have people that have already done it to give you, like you said, brutally honest criticism, but in a good way,
right,
to be able to make that a product that you can actually sell and be able to market.
And one of the other things that we do that helps the writers is we're going to have table reads with a lot of the local actors who are volunteering to read parts of the script. If a writer has a scene, they don't know if it works or not and everything. One of the things is, you know, until you hear your script read or performed,
mm-hmm.
you really, you know, it can look wonderful on paper, but then when you hear it, something doesn't ring true in it, and you get to, you know, it's a great tool for a writer to.
You know, that's actually funny, because I got this gentleman hit me up, Joe White. He's actually going to be on the show later next month, too. He was funny, because he actually wrote a great script that is in the pre-production process right now. And when I read it, we went to the reading, and it was funny, because he was some of the things in there have to do with police work and the state police and that kind of thing. And it was really funny for me and my husband to listen to this and then to make little notes and give it to him, because there was loose ends. And like you said, when you're writing it, when you're in that creative process, it's like you think it's great, but you forget that there's little loose ends. And it was really funny to see that with the little things that we told him, Joe went back and made a script that, oh my goodness, he just tightened that right up. And it actually got to the point where we read it the second time and we're like, whoa. It's incredible how valuable that is. And we weren't giving him, like, writing tips or any of that, because he's an amazing writer. It was just the details, the facts, the little things that were just little loose ends here and there, and how he was able to tie all the characters and the events together to make it a solid script. So that is really a big asset to be able to have that happen.
You have to remember that you're writing for your audience and you're not necessarily writing for yourself. So, I mean, you are partly mm-hmm. for yourself, because you've got your view you want to put out there, but ultimately you're writing for an audience, and you know, it would seem to me you need an audience to give you some feedback, so that helps.
You do, you really do, because it's important. You want to make sure that the audience is not, it's funny, because I actually had this happen once where I was actually watching a movie, and it's a running joke in my family, and my husband was flicking through the channel, so I was really intensely focused on this one character that was in a closet. And the movie came to an end, and I'm like, what happened to that character? My husband's like, that wasn't this movie. It was the other movie that was on the other channel. And it's funny because, okay, it was two movies, but I was so focused on that character that I totally missed everything else. And that can happen a lot of times in regular movies where you're like,
sure,
what happened to this character? And the writer totally forgot about it. Nobody else cared enough to figure out where he went, and it can leave the audience dissatisfied.
Right, right.
Another question I have for you, David, about the screenwriters thing and you guys meeting in MIT. What are some of the things that prospective screenwriters can do as well to maybe promote the group, website that they can get information on, ways that they can contact you to become part of the group?
We have on Facebook, if you look on the groups under Boston Scriptwriters, you should be able to find it. If not, just check my name and friend me. And I'll
Boston Scriptwriters group on Facebook.
Boston Scriptwriters group on Facebook. It's so far been the most user-friendly way to get the information out.
Mm-hmm.
We were on Beanywood for a while, and we were on. We tried a couple other venues, you know, a couple other things to get the messaging out and stuff, And it was a little faulty and stuff, but Facebook, everybody seems to have been able to get the announcements. Plus, I can edit anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like Richie confirmed about 2 days before the meeting. We were sort of up in the air a little bit, because we didn't know between our schedules and everything what was going to work. And so I was able to just immediately go in and edit the event and let people know that he was going to be there and stuff. And so you can check that out, and you could check me, Dave Folsom, on Facebook. And I usually post stuff. After I post the event, I'll usually post it on my status and everything, too, so you can get a link from there. So.
Right. Now, is there any charge to be a part of the group?
No,
what are the membership requirements, or how does it work?
The Boston group, there is no charge for the group. If
mm-hmm.
you are to go through the Hollywood Outreach Program with our LA group, Scriptwriters Network, there are annual dues. Okay, there's a $15 application fee the first time that you join,
mm-hmm.
and then the dues, regular dues, are $75 a year. If you're a full-time student, it's $45 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the, you know, Scriptwriters Network out in Los Angeles.
And how can people get more information about that?
You want to go to scriptwritersnetwork.org, and the entire website's up there. They have the speaker schedule that's out there, all the benefits, all the programs that they have. And you'll find under the writers group section, you'll find our group listed there too. And one other thing I want to mention is that Script Magazine contacted me a couple weeks ago, and they're going to list Boston scriptwriters on their website as part of their scriptwriting group series. So.
Excellent. So this is again more exposure that we here in the Massachusetts area are going to be getting.
Pretty good.
That's excellent. Now, another question that I have, we're quickly running out of time.
Sure.
So another thing that that people can do, you're telling us, you know, you can go to the meetings. If we go to your page on Facebook, we can get more information. What are some other ways that we can bring more members, get more exposure out? What do you see some of the things that we can do to continue this momentum of more scriptwriters and actors and just the momentum growing so we can actually become basically Hollywood East, which is what we're all shooting for, and this is something that's long in the making.
Well, you know, spread the word to anyone you know who is interested in doing the writing and stuff and everything. And you know, I mean, we're the only base out here. I mean, there are other groups. There's a Harvard Scriptwriters Group. There's other groups like that. We're the only base, I believe, that's directly connected to Los Angeles. And you know, just basically, if you know somebody who wants to write, or somebody who doesn't know if they should or anything, I mean, encourage
mm-hmm.
people also, because there are a lot of writers who won't show their work to anybody, and that doesn't do anybody any good either. One thing I should say is that if you have a script before you start showing it around, you should go to Writers Guild East, okay, WGAE, I think it's .org. And you can
mm-hmm.
register. You can register your script or synopsis or treatment or whatever on there, and that protects it automatically.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to mention that, and that's very important, because I know sometimes when we have a great script idea, we can get a little excited and start telling everybody about it. But you really do want to make sure it's copywritten, because the last thing, or registered, because you really don't want a great idea to kind of wind up going somewhere else, and then you're like, wait, that was my story.
Yeah, there's always the you know, you're talking about it in a restaurant, somebody overhears something like that. You know, I mean, there's always that thing. It doesn't happen as often now because, especially in Hollywood, I dealt with a lot with the pitching. I ran the pitching festival out there and everything, and a lot
mm-hmm.
of people were very concerned about it and stuff and everything. Studios don't usually hijack ideas or scripts or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you submit, you usually have to sign a waiver or something like that. But it's actually cheaper for them to buy a script than it is to go through the whole litigation process and everything else. And stuff.
Yeah, it's usually not the studios you have to worry about. Like you said, it's more like the overheard conversation, or you're talking and holding about this great script idea, and next thing you know, someone runs with it. And in reality, it's like anything else. You just have to guard your ideas
and
protect them.
If you register with the guild, it actually establishes a timeline of when you first came up with the, you know, when you first registered the idea with them. And so
mm-hmm.
further down the line, if you find yourself in that situation, you know, you call the guild up, and they say, okay, here's the record of your registration. And I believe with WGA East, it's protected for 10 years, and then you can renew. You know?
Right.
But, I mean, it's just great to have that. And then, you know, because frankly, if you don't show your script, nothing will happen with it unless you're going to make it yourself. And then
absolutely. And that, again, can be – It's even though with the technology and everything, it can still be pretty pricey to get a script done. And even though we do have a great pool of actors in the area that are willing to basically do what we call copy and credit, you know, they'll get the name on there, they get a copy of it, and we feed them. It still can be pricey with the camera equipment and the editing and all the other stuff that goes into it. So, David, what do you see in your future? Where are you going? What are you doing?
Right now I'm preparing to direct a short film. I have a special effects person. I don't want to say who it is right now. He's produced. He's had a couple of Hollywood movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working with some local people, and we're going to do this short film, and
mm-hmm.
We're going to take it on the festival circuit, and hopefully all the way to the Oscar, you know, so we'll see what happens. You got
to
dream.
Excellent.
Day.
I yeah. want a good reason to spend a lot of money on a really cool dress.
Cool. And we'll do the red carpet down here. I'll get him over here.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So, David, are there going to be any casting calls for any small projects that you're involved with, independent projects, any of that?
We're planning on filming the short sometime late spring, early summer, and I'll be
mm-hmm.
putting out some information on that.
Where are places that our listeners can go to keep an eye out for casting calls?
I will, it'll probably be newenglandfilm.com or because I want to blanket the area, beaniewood.com. I will post
mm-hmm.
something on Facebook. The info will be out there. NewEnglandFilm.com is a really, really great site as far as finding projects and stuff also.
That's right. For our listeners to know that there's a lot of independent producers and directors and filmmakers that do go to New England Film. It's a great opportunity if you're new to acting or want to get more exposure to the industry. You can get in there. They're willing to work with you, and it's just a great opportunity for you to start building up your resume and just to get more understanding of the industry itself.
Right. I know that the local casting companies, too, are beginning to get involved with more independent film type stuff as far as spreading the word on castings and stuff, too.
That's really very true. David, I'm running out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been amazing. I'm going to have you back.
Sure.
Once your projects get going more, and definitely have to get more information for you to come back about the scriptwriters and where it's going. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, to our listeners, Facebook, you can go check David out and check out his scriptwriters group. And the links that he has just given us are up in our chat room, so you can get them there, or you can contact me directly and I will get the information to you. So David, thank you so much for joining me. It was really great to have you, and as usual, you're a wealth of information. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, Charlie. You're welcome.
Okay, have a great evening.
You too. Take care.
All right, bye. Okay, guys, to our listeners, Mark Mann, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello.
Hello. Sorry about that.
What was that? You sounded like you had hiccups or something.
No, it was the computer. It was really the computer that was having issues.
I know. I guess the computer was having hiccups.
Yeah, big time, because it was...
there goes the voices in my head. I have 90 seconds.
Give me a call after.
Okay, listen to all our listeners. Thank you so much for joining us, Mountain Man. Thank you again for being my co-host and for being so gracious to run my chat room. I'm totally indebted to you. Sean, thank you so much for joining me, and to all our other listeners and in the chat room. Actually, Sean, I'm going to give him a little shout-out. He's going to be on our show. We have a great show coming up November 11th in honor of our veterans, and Sean's going to be my guest on that day. He's going to share some of his experience as a veteran and some of the challenges that he had to deal with when he came home and his amazing acting career that he's getting started on, so I'm really looking forward to it. Friday, we're going to have a great guest on our show, and it's funny, I just blanked out. Oh, Joe White was, we had to reschedule him, so we have a surprise guest for you on Friday. I'll have the information up on the website later on. Mountman, thank you so much for being with me. To everybody else, have a great night, and remember, do not let anyone ever steal your dreams away. Have a great one, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. been a long road. I don't know where it's gonna take me. All I got faith. My fam, my loved ones, my block, my people. So love. It's a struggle. You just gotta keep up, keep walking, keep your eyes on the prize. The other foot in front of you. Never know where life will take you, man. Ride with me. Back in the 70s, dad just a boulder. A little earlier, my grandma raised a daughter. A beautiful thing, she was a ghetto flower. Caught a young man's attention with her power. It was love at first sight, I saw she thought. But a couple months later, he left her with a broken heart. Young and naive, only 17. About to have a